Hey, all you pet stylists, you found the Groom Pod. Welcome to our virtual salon. My name is Susie, and I'm your host. I'm a mobile groomer from Seattle, Washington, and anyone who knows me will tell you I love to talk, especially about my job. One of my favorite people to talk to is my friend and mentor and star of the show from Tucson, Arizona, and groomblog.blogspot.com, Miss Barbara Bird.
Hello, groomers. Hi, Susie. What's up?
Hi, Barbara, and welcome to episode 72 of the Groom Pod. I know it. Recorded on May 15th, 2016 from Snohomish, Washington and Tucson, Arizona. This week on the Groom Pod, we're going to get all tied up in top knots. We're going to talk about geraniol. Did I get that right?
Right.
Closer. And we're going to talk about the dreaded returning of the phone calls. So you can join the discussion at facebook.com/group/thegroompod. You can find the Groom Pod and subscribe to it at Stitcher, at iTunes, and now at the Google Play Store. And you can find all things related, including our Amazon banners and the Groom Pod donation button at www.thegroompod.com. And please remember to share us with all of your grooming friends so we can continue to grow. What's new this week? Brought to you by Barbara's Shopping Site. Shop for specialty grooming items at www.shop.bbird.biz. Shop with a groomer, it's good karma. Hey Barbara, what's new this week?
Well, I've got a couple of things to tell you. Are you interested in personal information?
Of course.
There's news about my legs. We all know that I'm having a lot, as in L-O-T, all caps, of problems with my knees and my legs. And it haunted me during my trip to New Zealand and Australia. Well, this week I got new cortisone shots in the knees, and it really helped me with the knee pain. But I have a new diagnosis that helps to explain why it is so darn difficult for me to stand in line or stand anywhere. I have shin splints.
Oh, I have shin splints. They're horrible.
So they're horrible. And I finally got, my primary care doctor just kind of glazed over my complaining about this, but my physician's assistant who gave me the shots in the knees, he took it seriously, even took x-rays of my shins to make sure I didn't have bone things happening. And he diagnosed me with shin splints, told me to wear compression sleeves and ice, and he changed my NSAID to something especially good for that sort of pain. And I am having progress in the matter. So I am just
fantastic.
I'm mostly relieved to know that it's not just my imagination that I can't stand. So it's true. He said it must be very painful. And I said, yes, thank you. Thank you. So there's the personal news. Now, let me tell you what's going on at the grooming table, because this is kind of a fun thing. I've been using Vet Wrap to help me with my styling.
And with your styling?
So we go to the dog shows and you kind of look at those show dogs and you see them on the grooming table and they're all wrapped up and ears are wrapped and tails are wrapped and whole coats are wrapped and all of that. And I take note and I thought, well, I'm glad I'm not a show groomer. And then I look in the competition ring and I see dogs coming in. I noticed that the Bichon tails are sometimes wrapped. And I thought, well, what is that? So when I was in Australia watching Jody Murphy, she wrapped a tail before she started grooming. And I thought, oh, maybe this isn't just for the competition ring. I wonder. So I discovered that wrapping a Bichon tail or any, there are so many dogs that use their tails are such a pain in the ass while you're grooming them, because sometimes they'll even cover your hand with their tail. Or, you know, you're trying to scissor between the back legs from the front and you might snip the tail.
Exceptionally challenging for a girl who uses a 40 blade and the clipper back to skim pads.
Yeah.
It's like the tail is a magnet.
The tail is in the way. You know, it's sometimes hard to get a really nice rump line because the base of the tail is all fluffy. So I started wrapping the tail. I bought a bunch of vet wrap off of Amazon. It was really inexpensive. I bought several rolls, different colors, and I just wrapped the tail from the very base all the way up to the tip. And then, you know what? It's a great handle, and it's not in danger of getting cut. And I'm doing a really nice rear end lines, as well as I see in between those back legs really well. It's just helping me define my grooming. And so I started using it on the ears. And I vet wrap my ears of all my drop-coated dogs. So my Shih Tzus and my Lhasas and all of those poodles, all of these dogs that have long, droopy ears. And especially when you're trying to do like a teddy bear face or some kind of a face. And instead of lifting the ear up and then you change, you lift the cheeks up and you change it. I just wrap it and the ears are out of the way. Sometimes they're sticking out kind of cute. Sometimes they're just standing up. But the ears are out of the way and you can actually see the definition of the cheek and the whole round face. And I'm getting the nicest faces.
Okay, so you wash the dog, you dry the dog, then you wrap the ears, then you do the styling?
Yeah. Oh, cool. Yeah, you know, I sometimes I wait until I do the head and then I wrap the ears and do the styling. And then I you know, as I take the wrap off, I roll it up into a little roll and then I can reuse it several times. You know,
I'm going to try this, Barbara. I'm excited.
I did two Maltese yesterday and I did a little Asian face on one. I'm trying to do his face like I do my Leo, where he has the long ears and then the really tight little Asian face. And I wrapped his ears. And then the other one has the more traditional style Dutch boy kind of face. I wrapped his ears. Both those faces came out the best ever.
This is good, you guys. If you don't, let's all run out and get some vet wrap on Amazon at the Groom Pods website.
Yeah. So there you have it. What's new for me?
Oh, that is really cool. So any word on the glasses?
I have my glasses. I'm wearing my glasses.
And?
I have mixed reviews. I mostly am happy with them, but it's a little tricky doing the computer work with the glasses because there's so many gradations that I'm working through that it might take me a little longer to get used to them.
You know what I did?
What?
I went out to the dollar store because my mid-range, even though my eyes are slightly different, my mid-range is kind of fairly close to like 2.0. So I went out and bought a pair of 2.0s. And then when my eyes are tired and I can't use the three levels, then I put on the 2.0s if I'm exclusively working on the computer. And it helps. I also bought a pair of reading glasses for reading exclusively because the reading portion is tiny.
But you see, I have my left eye is different than my right eye.
Mine too.
One eye has astigmatism and one eye doesn't. And, you know, so the glasses people, they explained to me that I really needed to try to get used to my prescription glasses. That
okay. They're so demanding, you know.
You know, the other funny thing that happened at the Lens Crafter snobby glasses store is that, when I was in Australia, you know, Jody Murphy has this fabulous friend named Mickey. And Mickey is a Malibu girl who has been best friends with Jody forever. And she travels with Jody. And she's just Jody's kind of personal assistant. And then she helps out in a lot of other ways when she's on board any event. She's a lot of fun, totally outgoing, totally out there, totally fun. Well, anyway, we were shopping and I needed a new pair of cheap sunglasses. And so I was shopping and looking at these very Hollywood looking sunglasses with rhinestones on the side, a little bling there, you know, and I thought they looked real good on me. And It happened to be the same glasses that Mickey had on her. Oh. And I was going to buy these glasses for $20. And Mickey says, "Wait, are you going to buy those?" And I said, "Yeah, I think they look cool. What do you think?" She said, "They do look good." She said, but look, I can get those for $5 in Mexico. Here, have mine." And she gave
my gosh,
sunglasses that were just like that. So anyway, jump to Lens Crafters. I wore my cheap $5 Mexican knockoff sunglasses into Lens Crafters, and the staff there complimented me. I love just sunglasses. Those are really nice sunglasses. I said, "What? $5 in Mexico?"
Yeah, I love it.
So, you know, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. And so I spent $500 on one pair of glasses that looked good. And I spent, you know, like nothing on the other ones. So that's kind of cool.
I wanted to take a moment to properly pronounce Sion's name. I think I looked it up on the internet. Hopefully I got it right. Because she gave us $100 to get me the Superview. Yeah. So that is halfway, just exclusively on her donation. And she claims that she's trying to get me the other half too. But I was so blown away when I looked at the amount. I cannot thank her enough, because that's half of my ticket. That is half of my ticket.
Gee, cool. That is so cool.
I know it.
Make it, Susie.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, and I had such a ball at Super Zoo.
I know it. So another thing that's happening in my world today is very, very exciting. And it's the Mobile Spring Bash, the Mobile Groomer Spring Bash.
Oh, time again for that. Yeah.
Yep. And I was up last night baking cookies. I have a little tummy ache because I ate a lot of cookie dough yesterday, but it was fabulous. These might be the best cookies I've made in the last 5 years. So anybody who's going to the Mobile Roundup gets to eat my cookies. And they're just regular cookies, nothing special in them. No magic cookies, just plain old regular cookies. And they're so delicious.
Magical because they got Susie Scott mojo on them.
They do. They're going to be great. So I want to mention it because I want to encourage you guys all out there to have a grooming party of some sort with your pals. Get out there and network. There's no better icebreaker than to show up at somebody's shop with a little flyer that says, "We're having a grooming get together," because they all want to talk to us. We all want to talk to each other. But unless somebody actually plans the event, it never happens.
I know. Everybody has more fears than are necessary for that.
Yes, it's so true. So what we've got going on today is all of our mobile groomers are going to meet in a parking lot, but it's a very visible parking lot. So we'll circle the wagons, and the weather's kind of crappy. So we've got the pop-up awnings, and we have camping tables, and everyone is bringing finger foods, and we have a sharpener coming. And Michael from Cascade is coming with Wesley also, and they're going to bring a full van full of stuff to sell. You know, another thing you can do, which I didn't promote this time, is you can bring like your extra scissors and your extra clipper blades or clippers or stuff you're not using anymore, and have a swap meet, you know, with all their stuff. You can just get rid of some of your stuff, your smocks, things you don't need. You can donate stuff to beginning groomers. We invite people from the local school. We invite groomers off the Facebook list. Anybody who wants to come and see what mobile grooming is like is welcome to come to our big bash. But like I said, unless you plan it, and that's you, meaning the exact person I'm talking to out there, knows who they are. They want to do this and they just haven't taken the jump. Whoever you are out there, get on it, because it is so fun. And we've got a massive referral list that we collect every time we get everybody's names and update all the information. And then we pass it out at these events so that we all have a sheet to refer to when someone's looking for a mobile groomer. So that's the way we do ours. We also meet for dinner. And it's just because it's a mobile grooming spring bash does not mean that other groomers are excluded. Significant others can come. We had so much food last year. It was insane. So I'm hoping for a really successful turnout.
Oh, I hope so too.
Yeah, I wish you were here, because boy, that would be fun.
I wish you were here to help me do this here. I, of course, am not the one to organize an event because I just don't have the time, but I sure would go to one if Tucson groomers would get together and have a get together. So
yeah, that's a good idea.
Come on.
Yeah, somebody out there who's not quite as busy as Barbara in the Tucson area, start shaking cages and picking up the phone and dropping by places.
We've got an Arizona groomers list. We could use that as a starting point.
It's worth it.
I would just love to see a little bit more networking among Tucson groomers and a little less standoff-ish kind of competition. And the Arizona groomers Facebook page has offered a step in that direction. It really has loosened up groomers and provided some networking and everything. And I'd like to see it hit an even more local level. And, I'm not intimidating. I would come along. I would have fun.
Yeah. And it's interesting because it has taken 12 years to really cultivate the relationships between the groomers that we have now. I mean, 12 years, but every bit of it has been worth it because the people that I met 12 years ago when we first had our grooming association, those people are still coming to our events today. And you know them and you know that they're still in business. You can feel comfortable referring to them. It's just this really cool community that we've created here in the Northwest. Sometimes it gets a little bitchy, but that's because we're all a bunch of women. But in the big picture,
what a misogynist thing to say.
I can't help it. A little peek into my psyche is I was a gymnast from the age of 5 to the age of 22. And gymnastics is very much a team sport that's competed by individuals. Because even though you're competing for a team total, you're competing against every single one of those girls on the team for mm-hmm. the spot to compete. It has so screwed up my relationship with women. And it's obvious as I go through life that really the gymnastics thing had this really profound effect on my ability to have a friendship with women. I really have to work on it. It's not natural for me because I always switch to that. I'm very competitive and I switch to the competitive thing. And it's weird. It's weird. But I'm learning. I'm working on it.
As an old time, and I do mean old, feminist, and a one-time kind of prominent person in the local women's movement, I would add that one of the things that we need to do is get rid of these kind of stereotypical assumptions we have about gender, like that women are bitchy. You know, men are serious assholes too.
Yes, very true.
It's not really a gender-specific characteristic. And although there is a phenomenon that has occurred culturally where women cut down other women, and you need to be active against that kind of stuff. And
okay, I'll change my language.
Language creates reality, Susie.
That's what I'm saying.
Yep. So I agree. Thanks for getting on that.
Yeah. And actually, we have broken down all the walls. The walls have been broken down for me by being a groomer because we have so many women in the industry. I mean, that's been a good thing for me, really. And it's the reason I say it, though, is because when dudes have a scrap, they start pushing each other and, getting physical. Women don't generally choose that path. They choose the passive aggressive path. Yes, but I love all my girl pals. I really do. And I'm looking forward to spending a big old day with all of them and their significant others this afternoon down in Renton at the Wajamaya parking lot. Woo!
All right, you go.
All right. What is it, girl? Is it a fire? Is it Barbara? It's Barbara. Is Barbara in the well? No. Oh, it's time for Tail Wagon Trivia. Well, let's move on to our newest segment, which is the Tail Wagon Trivia. Thank you to Daryl Connor. I'm not sure we're going to stick with that name, but we're going for it right now. Here it is. The Bedlington is not the only breed having a whip tail or rat tail. Name the sporting breed for which the rat tail is a striking characteristic. I have no idea, Barbara. This one I'm going to have to think on. So we will revisit the question at the end of the show.
I'll give a clue.
A clue? Okay, a clue. Good.
A clue is that this breed This fairly rare breed was groomed competitively by Michelle.
Oh, our hero Michelle Evans?
Michelle Evans used this breed in grooming competitions. So if you are a grooming competition observer, you may have seen this breed in competition with Michelle Evans.
And no cheating. You can't go to her website and look it up. No cheating.
Okay.
Ready, groomers? Here comes our first appointment.
I love it. Let's head over to our first appointment, which is about tied up top knots. So I'm really good at tying up my own top knot, as you guys who have all seen me can see. I'm good at putting my hair in a ponytail, but I absolutely suck at doing it on the dogs.
What happens?
You know, it never looks right. It's always wonky sideways. There's hair sticking out. I don't know how much hair to grab. Sometimes I grab too much. Sometimes I grab too little. It's a challenge for me. But let me share with you all. These are actually just interesting facts about top knots. I've got two of them. The first one is, do you know where people first started to use the term top knot?
No.
I will tell you. It was the samurai. The samurai in Japan.
Oh, my goodness.
Yep. They first called their little bun a top knot. And then my second little piece of interesting, tidbits of information is the cowboys in the first half of the 19th century had a saying that was, watch your top knot. Do you know why they said that?
I give up.
Because it was custom for the Native Americans to remove it.
Oh, remove the scalp.
Yeah, they they use the term, watch your top knot.
That's the factoid there.
I know it. So help me with my top knot problem, Barbara.
Okay, so
start out with the boundaries. Like, I don't know where to separate, how to pick the spots to separate the hair.
The boundaries are what's important. So here's what you do. There are two kinds of top knots. You can either gather everything together in one top knot, or you can do a double. And I actually prefer the double.
I've never done a double.
Well, that might be part of your problem.
I've seen them, though.
Yeah, and of course, you know, when we're tying up show poodle top knots, there's triple quadruples involved.
Yeah,
right?
I've seen that too. Yeah, it looks funny.
And almost always on even an informal poodle tie up, you're going to do two. Maltese, you do two.
Right.
And Maltese for show are divided side by side as well as front to back, right?
Right.
That rather than front to back. But we're talking here about doing a one piece or a two piece front to back top knot. So the boundary is the corner, outside corner of the eyes over the top of the head. So you have to pull everything, you know, you just draw a little half moon. And you want to pull enough up that it's not going to fall forward. So you want to come back far enough that it's going to not want to come forward. But you're not going to go any further back for the first cut than, my Maltese is in the crate. I can't check that out.
They're being so quiet.
They are being quiet because they're in the other part of the house.
That's it.
Not when I need to look, when I need one to refer to. So you're gonna go from the back corner of the eyes up over the top of the head, pull that up, and that's your first piece of top knot. And then you go behind that and draw another one up, and that's your second. And then you attach first to second, and you have one two-piece top knot, okay?
Okay, so, is this all taking place in front of the ears?
Pretty much.
Or does it?
No. Your second piece is going to go
above the ears, into the ears area.
Yeah. You're going to want to draw some of that that's actually right up in the crown and closer to the occiput. You're going to want to draw that up in your second piece, because that you don't want to go any further than the occiput back there. But, you know, you need to experiment with that, Susie.
So are you banding and then connecting?
Yes, banding and then connecting the two pieces. Because if you don't, one's going to go off one side. And, you know, the important thing to keep them from going from side to side is to pull it up evenly from behind the from the cord. And, you know, you need to use a comb or a rat tail, you know, either a wide tooth comb or a rat tail comb to cleanly delineate not just the corner of the eyes, but the whole circle that you're pulling up. Because where it gets wonky is when you get careless in pulling up pieces at the back side of your top knot. If it's not nice and clean on the back side of your top knot, it's going to fall off to one side or be uneven.
And it just looks bad. It just doesn't look right. Bad.
Yeah.
Okay. I had a thought. Could I spray the hair with water or a finishing spray to help me gather the hair?
Oh, of course.
I've never done that.
And in fact, I encourage the use of scissoring or finishing sprays in all of our work. It just really helps to reduce static electricity and to help to define what you're doing. You're not really going to wet it.
Right.
But just barely missed it so that you have more control over the hair. The trick, what you need to do is to use less hair. Don't try to just gather that whole thing up there. Here I am pulling my own hair.
if you guys could only see.
You want me to go get Marco and you can see it?
No, I think I'm getting a good idea. I think I've got a good idea.
When they do Maltese and Shih Tzu top knots for show, it gets so precise, and they train the dogs to lay their chins on a cushion, and they sell special cushions for this job.
Really?
Satin and embroidered or something, you know, and cost a bunch. But they sell special cushions that you get the dog to put his chin on, and then you have total control of doing the top knot.
You could use the stirrups from the OBGYN. You could just take one of the stirrups and
and this might be another point where wrapping the ears might be helpful.
Oh, good. Yeah, actually,
you know,
you're right.
Wrap at the base of the ears, and then you're going to see the crown hair a lot more clearly. Yeah.
So are you using the old-fashioned rubber bands like we used to use to braid horsehair? Is that what you're using?
I get the bands from the Maltese website. I have two of my own dogs now that are in. I have a Bichon and a Maltese that I keep in a top knot because I love top knots. I think they look so cute and just so stylish. And even though Marco is a little boy and I get a lot of flack about having him in a top knot, it's perfect for him. His look is his look, you know?
Yep.
And I'll probably keep it for a while. He's 2.5 years old now. So he's the top knot seems to be his styling element for this dog. And Yvonne, my assistant, she loves being a top knot technician. She's mastered it, you know.
She does top knot technician. I love it.
She uses her fingernails, by the way, not a comb. But she does the same thing. She's outlining that circle before she pulls that hair up so that, you know, and she's very careful. She'll hold it up and then she'll pull out pieces that don't belong. And, you know, it takes a little bit of time. If you just take a couple of extra minutes in doing your top knot, rather than thinking you can do it all in one fell swoop, you're going to come up with a more lovely top knot. And then it's going to be less likely. The two-piece top knot, which you can pull back more towards the back of the head, is not going to drop into the dog's face as much as if you make it too far forward.
Okay, so the actual location of the top knot does make a difference because oftentimes mine fall forward. So I just got to move it back a little bit, huh?
Move it back a little bit, yeah. Take that and take more from off the back side of the crown into your second piece.
Okay.
Open back more.
Okay, so we've got the two now hooked up into, so then you take a third rubber band and band them together?
Yeah, so there's three rubber bands.
Okay, then one time I saw somebody take one of those rat tail combs and come through in front of the rubber band and poof out the hair. Do you do
that?
That's
how they make the bubble.
Yeah, okay, yeah, the bubble.
Right? So the bubble is important in many of the show top knots. It's very critical to the poodle look, the show poodle look. Man, it's amazing to watch a show handler do that little puffy bubble. One of the key elements of the nice look for the show poodle, as well as these other breeds. I mean, you don't want a top knot that's just you don't want just something that's just like pulling the eyes back. You want to create that little thing. We often don't do that. And that's one of the things that's missing from Yvonne's top knots that isn't right to my eye, because sometimes she just pulls them back so far that it gives the dog kind of a little flat top behind the eyes. I like the little bubble that creates some depth of expression.
So when I was a little girl and in those gymnastics meets and also dance, we always had to have hair out of the way. And I can remember how horribly painful it was for my mother to get out the brush and pull my hair up there into that little bun and wrap it around my head. And then she took these, I swear they were spikes like they used in the railroad, and she'd hammer them into my head to hold that hair up there while I did my tumbling and stuff. It was horribly painful.
The hair, too. It's bad for the hair.
Oh, I was going to ask about that. So if you've got
if you're going to have a customer that uses a top knot, you want somebody who's willing to learn how to do it and to take the top knot down and redo it at least weekly.
At their house.
Yeah, because if they just leave it for a month until the dog comes back, the dog's going to rub on it. It's going to make a great big dreadlock. And then you're breaking hair, and, you know, so even the more expensive hair-friendly bands are going to damage hair if they're left in there indefinitely.
Okay, so do you have a conversation with your client before you commit to the top knot then?
Maybe not the first time if I want to like it. But if we're going to keep it, then I say, you know, if we're going to keep this and not have it just break apart, because what happened even with Belle, my Bichon, is that we kept her in top knot for about a year, and I didn't take real good care of it, and eventually the hair broke so much that you couldn't get it all up into the.
You mean like this?
Yeah, like you. Yeah. So she had this loose fringe that would always fall out of the top knot. And so I finally decided it was time to put her back into a Bichon head. And I just cut it off.
Okay. So if in fact you've got a dog that's going to be kept in a top knot, is there, like, can you use one of those more gel-like protectant area on the hair down there? Would that help it protect it from the band? No, that would probably make it too slippery.
You know, there is a new band out that's available at Groomers Mall. It's a wrap.
Oh.
Now, I have to admit that I tried them once and I couldn't make it work. I just made a mess with it. But from the video, the person that developed this little banding method and this product, she gets a good top knot up there. I couldn't make it tight enough to make it stay.
And I'll have to look at that.
Yeah, but it is an option. And if you're a top knot, big fan of top knots, you might check that out. It's not expensive to buy it and try it out. And it's available, and I don't know if it's called bandless top knot wrap or something like that, but you can find out, and if you can't find it on their website, you can call them at Groomers Mall, and they'll be sure to direct you to it.
Those people at Groomers Mall seemed really nice. One last thing, accessorizing your top knot.
Oh, well, that's the most fun.
That's what I thought. I've never, without having top knot dogs, I never get to do this.
Yeah, you know, they're just all kinds of really crazy, nice bows and bangles for top knots. And you can find them on Amazon, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And you can find them on websites that are particularly for Shih Tzus and Maltese. Any of these top knotted breeds that are shown. I have bows for Marco when he was a show dog that cost $20 each.
Right. They make some of those hard bows and they make the little barrettes.
Crystals and everything, you know.
Yeah.
You can go very fancy or you can go really cutesy.
When I do the classic, what was, of course, a single top knot, which will now become a double into a single top knot as I go forward from here. Sometimes I'll put a little bow right in the front, right at the rubber band wrap spot. Generally, I do it over the top of the band. Is that the way to go? So like your bow has a rubber band on it, and then you leave your top knot in the rubber band, and then you just add the bow to your already banded top knot.
Yeah. Yeah, don't use the bow as you're securing top knot. For one thing, you might want to use that bow again.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know, a lot of the more expensive top knot bows come with two rubber bands so that if you break one, you've got another.
That's why they do that. I never knew that.
You wanted to figure out, where do I put this other rubber band? No, it's a spare.
Well, fascinating. And there are lots of bow producers that show up at the trade shows. So there's another place you can kind of see some of that stuff.
Yeah, and there's I like the Bardell puffs. Those just like round, fancy puffs that they make. I think they make a really cute top knot decorations. And
cool.
We've used those a lot. Yeah.
I do with the occasional top knot that I get to do. I will occasionally put a little color on the end because that's kind of fun.
Aww, yeah.
I love color.
One of the times I did Diva, I did her in a top knot. I colored it pink, and then I made it into a pom-pom by twisting it all up and cutting it across, and then it puffed out like a little pom-pom on top of her head, and it was just like this little pink pom-pom on top of her head. That was really cute.
That is really cute. See, I just need to cultivate a little bit more of the top knot clients now. Oh, one other thing. I always think of it being a drop coat thing, but you were saying, and a poodle thing, but you were saying you're doing it on the Bichons.
Bichons look adorable with pulled up top knots.
Yeah, so get out there and get creative with your top knots, people.
Sometimes the Bichon top knot, it gives that height to the crown that you want to create that sort of round circle. So even though you're interrupting the circle to pull it into a top knot, you still have the height. So the suggestion is still there.
The shape's still there.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of there, but not there. But I think Bichons look adorable with top knots. So try it. Yeah.
All right, I will. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is why Barbara Bird gets the big bucks. All right, another reason she gets the big bucks is the middle feature of our show, and that is the definition du jour. The definition du jour. Okay, Barbara, here you go.
Okay, so I want to talk today about geraniol. And geraniol, so how this came about was that a groomer messaged me wanting me to take a look at some, quote, herbal pesticide alternative products. So these were spot-on and collar products made for pets that were supposedly non-chemical. He said, I'm looking for a non-chemical alternative, and what do you think about these? And they have some essential oils in there. So I took a look at it, and first thing that I saw was that the main ingredient, the main pesticide, is geraniol. And I have been familiar with geraniol. I've used it in products. It is a good mosquito repellent and insect repellent. But here's some things that we need to know about geraniol. It's a component of essential oils. So basically, it is a biochemical. It is a biologically based chemical, right? It is a monoterpene alcohol. It has the chemical formula of C10H18O, or 10 carbons, 18 hydrogens, 1 oxygen. So it has a chemical formula. Hello.
Therefore, it's a chemical.
Chemical. Here we go again, right?
Right.
So right off the bat, get over it. Even nature is chemical, and this is indeed a chemical. And not only that, geraniol is not found by itself in nature. There isn't a geraniol bush.
Yeah, I've never heard of one.
No, there are several essential oils which have geraniol as a significant component, including rose oil, geranium oil, where it got its name,
right?
And prominently in palmarosa oil and citronella. So geranium is actually a more costly source because it's a more expensive plant to distill. So it's really a rather poor source of geraniol. Most often I read, here's what I read, currently geraniol is commercially available through extraction mainly from plants. However, it is an inefficient model for geraniol production, as geraniol represents only a small portion of the plant biomass. More currently, geraniol is synthesized from other plant-based materials. So geraniol is a big biochemistry deal. Let me read this to you. So geraniol is synthesized from something called beta pinene. Pinene oil comes from pines. So pine oil is really available. Look at all the forestry and stuff that happens. So, you know, there's much more pine needles than there are geranium blossoms, right?
Yes.
So what they do here, pyrolysis of beta pinene yields myrcene. What is pyrolysis? So here I am going on my chemical adventure. Pyrolysis. Yeah, I love this. I'm looking up something that's supposed to be herbal, and I'm diving deeply into chemistry. Pyrolysis is the decomposition of materials under high temperatures in the absence of oxygen.
Okay, so the
pyrolysis of pine beta pinene, there's alpha and beta. Beta pinene yields myrcene, which is converted into a mixture primarily of geranyl, neryl, and linyl chloride by addition of, don't follow this, just get it, hydrogen chloride in the presence of small amounts of catalysts such as copper chloride and an organic quaternary ammonium salt. Hello, is this natural?
Not at all. And it's nothing like what it was when it started.
And we're not even done yet in getting to geraniol. After removal of the catalyst, the mixture is reacted with sodium acetate in the presence of a nitrogen base and converted to geranyl acetate, neryl acetate, and a small amount of linalyl acetate. After saponification and fractional distillation of the resulting alcohols, a fraction is obtained that contains 98% geraniol.
That is a long journey, Barbara.
That's a long journey, and that's not exactly what I would call an herbal product.
Nope.
Now, I don't know whether this particular product that she's asking me about they're saying they have geraniol from geranium, but I would question that. I mean, almost always you see geraniol as from geranium because that's the plant from which the geraniol was first identified.
Plus, it's pretty and we like it and it's common.
Yeah. But here's another factoid about geraniol that we need to know. It may indeed be a less toxic pesticide. It's one of those pesticides that kills by decomposing the exoskeleton of the pest. Yeah, it softens the hard shell and the things die. In other words, it doesn't operate on nerve system, but it is one of the 26 fragrant allergens listed in the European Union directive that names fragrance components that need to be identified on labels because there's been a history of allergic reactions.
So it's a potential allergic reaction causer.
It is. The extent to which it's an allergen can be argued, but nonetheless, it's on that list of 26.
Okay.
Okay. So if you really read through the toxicological data, it seems to be a minimal problem. But it's,
I take it you did that.
I take it I did that. I read a lot of it. And, you know, reading through the toxicological data is something I do for us that's a heartbreaking thing because I hate those studies worse than anything. I would like to pretend they don't exist. Okay, so now, even more interesting, here's a point. Geraniol is one of the substances that's produced by bees to identify plants with pollen and to help them locate their hives.
Wow.
So I'm wondering, would I want to use geraniol here in Tucson, Arizona, where we have a problem with attack bees killing dogs?
Oh, you have the Africanized bees down there?
We have Africanized bees. And it just a couple of weeks ago, we had two dogs die out on the east side from being swarmed by these bees. Do you want to have something on your dog that actually attracts these bees? I don't know.
Basically, sending out a beacon for bees.
Yeah, yeah. I just don't know if I would use it in Arizona.
I don't know that I want to use it here, even though we don't have those Africanized bees here. I still wouldn't want my dogs getting stung.
There's no studies or anything to say to what extent that is actually going to happen, but that's an interesting factoid about geraniol.
That's one of those things where observation would tell you whether you could use it or not. If you have a dog and you choose to use it, and then you see the bees being more active near your dog, then maybe discontinue it.
And there was another thing. This is not related to geraniol, but the other thing, that the geraniol was the active so-called herbal. It made me mad that they identified geraniol as an herbal pesticide.
Yeah.
Well, to me, herbs are the actual plant crushed up, you know, and maybe an herbal extract, but this goes far beyond, you know, even if you obtain it by fractionated distillation is where you boil the essential oil at different temperatures and different parts of the essential oil distill off at different temperatures. You know, so that's okay. How you obtain the geraniol from the plant. Even if you obtain it like that, it's still not the same as using herbs. It's like 1,000 times more potent than the geranium flower, right?
They've really messed up that name natural. The term natural has so, it's just off the rails.
You know, this is biochemistry, and biochemistry is not a bad thing. It's a good thing. But it's chemistry. It's chemistry using plants.
Yep.
We just need to know that. And it's got, and it is 1,000 times more potent. I'm just making that up, 1,000
right.
times. But it's way, way, way more potent than anything you could do using a full plant.
So I'm going to take it that this does not show up in our shampoos, right?
Oh, geraniol shows up all over the place. It's one of the most common fragrance ingredients.
Oh, man.
It's in soaps. It's in dishwash. It's in laundry material. It's all over the place. Geraniol has been used for decades and decades. It's a very popular. This is one of the reasons why it's on that list, because it's very popular because it has this rose-like desirable fragrance element. It's a very popular fragrance component. It's used a lot in fragrances.
Interesting.
Yeah. Okay. Are we following it? So the other thing about these products, the inert ingredients, that was the active ingredient is the geraniol. The inert ingredient is almond oil and wintergreen oil. And you know what? They don't even say, and that's 99%. The inert ingredients are 99%. They're not even saying how much wintergreen oil they're using. And you want to know about wintergreen oil? It is not recommended as an essential oil to be used with animals. It's really? Not even recommended. Here is what my Encyclopedia of Essential Oils by Julia Lawless says about oil of wintergreen. Safety data, quote, toxic, irritant, and sensitizing, an environmental hazard or marine pollutant. The true oil is almost obsolete, having been replaced by synthetic methyl salicylate. Aromatherapy or home use, none. Avoid both internally and externally.
Wow, but I love wintergreen lifesavers.
Well, it's probably, yeah, you probably are. It's a flavor. It's a flavor component. It's probably methyl salicylate. It's not.
Right. They probably changed it out long ago.
They just call it wintergreen flavor, taste, yeah, or smell. And as is, this is probably that. But in order to make it look natural, they're calling it oil of wintergreen or wintergreen oil. And actual wintergreen oil is somewhat hazardous. It's one of the oils that Kristen Lee Bell recommends to never use on animals in her holistic aromatherapy for animals book.
And peppermint's okay though.
Why would they choose to use it? You see, I just get so upset about this kind of irresponsible choices of essential oils on the basis of it's an essential oil, it must be a safe, natural alternative. Wintergreen has not lived up to that safety. It's not something I would ever. It's like cinnamon oil. I would never choose cinnamon oil for a skincare product because it's highly irritating.
Oh, but it's delicious.
Right?
Yes. Okay, well, that's interesting. Anything else we need to know?
I think that pretty well sums it up. And I'm not saying that it's not a safe alternative. It may be, you know, it's, but we just need to know. It's not exactly a plant.
Yeah, not exactly natural.
It's not exactly my definition of natural. It might be biochemical.
Okay.
Okay.
At best. Yes. Okay. All right. Well, I just want to take a moment here to mention how fantastic Amazon Prime is. Because I am a true believer in Amazon Prime. And right now we have a special banner up on our website that is a free 30-day trial of Amazon Prime. And if you guys sign up for it through the website, we get a little teeny tiny commission off that, just like we do off of your shopping. So the things about Amazon Prime that make it cool is free 2-day shipping on Amazon Prime eligible purchases, unlimited streaming of movies and TV shows with Prime Video, and the opportunity to borrow books from the Kindle Owners Lending Library. And all of this you get for $99 a year or $10.99 a month. They've got a monthly one now. So if you guys are interested in trying out Amazon Prime or you want to support the show in the easiest way possible, go to the website www.thegroompod.com, scroll down on that first page and click on either the Amazon shopping banner with the dogs on it or the Amazon Prime offer, and that will help support our show. Let's see what's happening at the grooming table. Let's move on to the at the table segment. So there was a message on Facebook the other day about a phone call where you get the phone call The number comes across, but the people don't leave a message. And this gal was wondering, do you return those phone calls? And I do not return phone calls that don't leave messages. What about you?
She laughs. I don't return phone calls that do leave messages.
Well, me too.
I'm so terrible. And my customers are getting hip to me. So now I noticed today when I opened up my Gmail for this Google Hangout that we're doing together, I have two emails from customers wanting to make appointments. They're not even bothering to call and leave a message. Now, I've had some trouble in the last year keeping up with my answering messages and everything. And part of it is due to so much damn crap. How dare they leave messages just for sales stuff on my phone? I just hate having to wade through all of that crap stuff, marketing crap.
In order
to get to my customers, I think it's rude. I just think it's, I just resent it so much. And I've actually had times where I was just like kind of low on energy and unable to keep up with all of that. So I definitely don't answer phone calls that don't leave messages unless there's like two or three calls from a customer that I see it, that it comes up with their customer, their ID, and I see that so-and-so has tried to reach me about three times, then I might call them and say, are you trying to get in touch with me?
Actually, you just hit on a point. Yeah, if a client calls me and doesn't leave a message and I see it was their name, they would have to do it twice, but then I would call them back.
Yeah.
If they did it twice, because occasionally they're just redialing on their phone to figure out who it was that called because they don't have everybody's name in like I do. So then they'll call back and hang up. But if it were to be two phone calls from someone I actually knew, I would probably call them back. Or if it was a phone call from someone whose dog I had just groomed recently, I would call them back. But for the most part, if I don't recognize the number and you didn't bother to leave a message, I'm not going to go out of my way to return it. I, too, am very bad about returning phone calls. Part of it is because I don't have room to put anybody in anyway, and so the referral phone calls get answered later. Appointment changes, I'll usually get those right off the bat. If somebody needs to change their appointment, I'll call them back pretty quickly. But I got kind of savvy figuring out that if I put on my answering machine that you will get a quicker response if you text me. I'm having more people text me their appointment changes, and that makes it so much easier. I can deal with it right on the spot instead of getting in at 8 o'clock at night and then having to sit down and return phone calls. That's where I totally hate doing it. So my answering machine says I generally return phone calls in the evenings, and sometimes it will take me a few days to get back to you. That way I've kind of given myself a little bit of an excuse.
Yeah, I give myself room on my outgoing message, too. I like that idea about texting. Yeah, you know, I get messages that are groaners sometimes. You know, like I had somebody call, and they had a young Bouvier they wanted to be groomed, and they admitted it was rowdy. Forget it! It's hard for me to admit and realize and face the music that I'm just not physically able to do all of the dogs that I might have loved to do a few years ago. Although I don't know if I ever would have really have loved to do
Bucking Bronco Bouvier.
Bucking Bronco Bouvier, you know.
That's a tongue twister.
There are some things that just like harder to step into and to explain. And I tend to let those things go. You know, sometimes I tend to let cat grooming calls go too. If I'm just kind of not in the mood to groom a cat, especially.
Yeah, you got to be in the mood.
Yeah, you got to be in the mood. You got to be right on. You got to really want to groom a cat to groom a cat.
I will let them pool up and then answer and then return a bunch of them in a big lump sum. That's I'm guilty of that.
Yeah, I do that. And I will. And the other thing that I have is I listen to my messages on my shop phone at the shop, and sometimes it's really noisy and not conducive to talking on the phone. Maybe I've got barkers in there, or maybe there's a lot of dryer noise going on, and I don't want to. So, you know, I like to warn people on my outgoing message that I may not return calls within 24 hours.
Yeah, it just gives you a little bit of a break. Life is too short. We shouldn't put too much pressure on ourselves, you know. But we do have to remember, we are working for them. And even if they're new clients and we haven't done them before, we've got to recognize that they have a need. They need to get their dog done. They may have gotten yours or my name from a referral and don't want to go to somebody else. So they're actually sitting at their phone waiting for us to call them back.
I had a new customer yesterday that was like that. And it was a call that I originally put off because of my Australia trip. And it was a chow mix. And that's the kind of a breed that we might want to blow off. But you know what? And I sent her elsewhere, and she came back and made an appointment with me. And she came in yesterday. And look, it's a 35-pound dog. She was sweet. Her name was Molly. She was a sweet dog. It was a nice little de-shed and tidy up. I got $55. The dog was happy in the exercise pen. She was happy in the tub. She was good on the table. The customer was a really nice woman. And it was all a win-win. And she's booked for every 4 weeks. So
excellent.
Aren't I glad that I answered that one and didn't blow her off?
Yep. And it's important to remember also that these phone calls are the way we make our living. It's not meant to be an inconvenience, even though we perceive it as an inconvenience. So when you make those phone calls, put your voice in check. Make sure you're in a good mood. Make sure you're not stressed. Make sure you're smiling. I know that's kind of a cliche, but it's true. Do your research before you call them back. If you don't want to take the dog, get your referral list out. Be ready with that. Be ready with your good attitude. And remember that even if they're not your client, they're going to be some other groomer's client. And you want to be a representative of the field that we work in and a good positive contact for them.
I promise to do better. I admit I've become an old diva.
Okay, you do better at that. I will speak more positively about my relationships with women. Those will be our intentions.
Those are our intentions for the week.
Yeah. Okay, Barbara, it's time for the tail wagging trivia answer. What is the answer? I couldn't come up with one. I tried.
Okay, so what is the dog that is characterized by a rat tail? The sporting breed dog that is characterized by the rat tail is the Irish Water Spaniel.
Oh, of course. Of course. I don't see very many of those, although we do have a few out here being on the water.
If I had said water dog, if I had said curly coat, if I'd given you any more clues, you might have gotten it. But that rat tail is one of the key observational points, key identifiers of the Irish Water Spaniel.
And probably very important for him or her not to have a bunch of hair back there on that tail since it's wet most of the time.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, once again, thanks to Sion for sending me halfway to Super Zoo. And if you guys want to help us out, go to the website, donate, shop on Amazon, do all those cool things. And that will wrap it up this week on the Groom Pod. So happy grooming, everybody. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye, Barbara.
Bye-bye, Susie.
Well, stylists, it's time to sweep up the hair, clean out the tub, and turn out the lights on another episode of the Groom Pod. Remember to join the discussion group and be part of the show by liking us on Facebook at The Groom Pod. You can find Barbara online at groomblog.blogspot.com and at her shopping site, www.shop.bbird.biz. You can email me at Susie, S-U-S-Y, at thegroompod.com or Barbara@thegroompod.com. Please tell all your friends about the show and leave comments and reviews anywhere that you can. And also, please support the sponsors of the show. They make it possible for us to continue on. So on behalf of Barbara Bird and myself, thanks for listening and see you real soon.